One, two, three, four. Apples fall, and you're quite the little collector. You got them all. When you're a charmer, people respond. They can't see the hidden agenda you got going on. But when you're weak, it's a holy grail. You're two for one, it's a fire sale. And that's a wall that you cannot scale. So you're forced to burrow under. They don't know that secretly charmers feel like they're frauds. When you're a charmer, you hate yourself, a victim of such a hypnosis, like everyone else. And then your thinking goes black and white, and you're all hunger and appetite. This is a battle you cannot fight. No, you only can surrender. No, you only can surrender. No, you
So incapable of changing, you lie so well. I could never even tell what were facts in your artful rearranging. But I came back for more, and you laughed in my face and you rubbed it in. 'Cause I'm a a dove again. When we first met, I was glad to be your pet. Like a lamb I once had that we called Maisie. But fetching sticks was the best I had for tricks. You got bored, you got mad, and you got crazy. But I came back for and you rubbed it in. she waited at the stairs for you. Daisy dear, I could almost shed a tear, bullets shine in the time we have remaining. You're a tough old gal, but a dog is just a pal, and believe me my dear, I'm not complaining. Cause I came back for more, cause I knew even you did the best you could. I'm a Labrador, with me you could see it was understood. I come back for more. Daisy, Daisy too, cause I'm a
So we're talking with Amy Mann. She just played a couple of songs for us, Charmer and Labrador. First of all, thanks for coming down to KCSN.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Playing some songs. You know, I want to talk about the album, but before we get there, I was just thinking about this state of independence that the music world appears to have suddenly devolved into, and you
were, state of anarchy maybe.
Well, yeah, I don't know, but you were there a long time ago. I didn't realize it's been 12-13 years since you set up your own label. You've been releasing your own music for quite some time now.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And back when you were doing it, I mean, there were still labels and budgets and marketing and deals and all that kind of stuff, but these days most of the musicians I talk to are like, how do we get heard? Now, obviously, you've got a legacy from being around a while and putting out a lot of music. But I mean, where does it fit today? How does that fit for you as an independent artist on your own label?
Well, I can't imagine starting out now. I really can't. I don't know what people. I mean, obviously, there are some things you do. You know, like maybe you can build an internet presence, a Twitter presence, and have video, but I mean, all that stuff it's not that easy, like I just did a couple videos, and videos don't just make themselves, I mean, somebody does have to pay for them, and
they're a lot cheaper than they used to be, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, but there is a certain amount of money that does, that you
still have to find
like,
the bread,
Yeah, I mean, people don't just work for free. Like, I mean, you can get a lot of people work for free, but you can't get everybody to work for free all the time.
I know, people try.
Yeah,
though.
And then you get what you pay for,
Well, what about video? I mean, what part does that play in it? Because MTV's not going to play it, I wouldn't think.
I don't even know. Yeah, I'm not connected to that anymore. I don't even know if they play videos anymore.
Is it blogs?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can only tell you like what I do, which is sort of just vaguely adapting to what's sort of around me. I did just make a couple of videos. Actually, I have a new video out that's out today.
Did you see it? Yeah, for Labrador.
I really just thought that was the funniest idea. Yeah. And the director, Tom Sharpling, is a good friend of mine, and he's hilarious. And as soon as he suggested it, I was
But why make a video? What's the point?
The point is just to, to try to do something interesting so that people are, wind up listening to your song.
So yeah. The visual aspect of it then, I guess, is still relevant, but they got to discover it somewhere. So online
It's like you got to, put a worm on a hook, and then, hopefully they'll listen to the song and then like the song and then actually buy the song, which is like the other part of the problem.
They're not going to buy it.
Yeah. So then it is tough to know exactly what's going on. I mean, I guess, at the end of this record, I paid for it myself, and I paid for the videos myself, and I'll pay for the tour myself because the tour doesn't make any money. So, I guess she'll do, I'll just see if I'm, you know, poorer or have enough money in the coffer to make another one, you know.
Right.
You just, you, the goal is to keep going and to make a, make a little money to live on, and then, you know, keep the process going. I mean, I love being a professional musician. I hope I can continue to do it. So.
And touring, I would imagine, is even more essential now than ever.
Well, I mean, touring, you know, touring's tough. Like, the difficult part about touring is that it's, you know, I mean, that's expensive. And to support the new record, I really wanted to take out a full band to play the new song, you know, to have like one tour where the new songs were played, you know, more or less as they're played on the record with drums and everything, because I have been doing really stripped down kind of semi-acoustic tours. But I mean, that is at best a break-even proposition. So you do, you know, it's really a gamble. Like, you've, you know, you're putting all this work into it and spending a lot of money in just the hopes that the tour will get enough attention to the record, and then you'll sell enough records, so you just keep the whole thing.
To hopefully keep doing it.
Yeah, keep rolling.
Okay, so before we go any further, I do want to just point out the album is out today.
Yeah, today's the day.
On Super Ego Records. Charmer is the name of the album, and you have an in-store tonight as well at Barnes & Noble at the Grove.
Yes, at the Grove.
How nice.
With the Dancing Fountain.
Seven o'clock.
If you don't want to see me, come for the Dancing Fountain.
All right, so well, you could see you and the Dancing Fountain. You know, you can do more than one thing
it's
at the
Grove. It's the best of both worlds.
So let's talk about the album. I read where you said you were inspired by some of your pop idols of the 70s and the 80s, and I heard Blondie, The Cars. Tell us a little bit about that, because your more recent stuff has been more acoustic based and perhaps stripped down, and you've sort of really loaded the production elements back in this time. Synthesizers as well.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth, and you know, I have one of my keyboard players is a real kind of Moog nerd, and he really like constructs these fantastic sounds. So he was kind of a big influence, and got me thinking about the, you know, the early days of synthesizers, and you know, I just remember being a kid and hearing that stuff and my reaction to it, and then going back and listening to it and sort of seeing like really what were the elements, you know, when I would first hear that music, you know, like The Cars or Blondie, my experience of it was like, oh, it's so mechanical, like it's, you know, it's so futuristic. But you go back and listen, it's really just like a rock band with some dude playing a synthesizer, like
keyboard. Got some little sounds on top of the rock songs.
So I thought it was really interesting to me. So I was just sort of revisiting, you know, moments of pop music that got me from various times, like, you know, Glenn Campbell singing Jimmy Webb songs was sort of one of them, and you know, ABBA was another thing I was listening to. There's this Ozark Mountain Daredevil song called Jackie Blue that to me is almost like a perfect pop song of the 70s, and I've always been fixated on that song, so that was a big influence for this record too.
Just an aside, isn't it weird that ABBA are all of a sudden cool?
It is. Well, I think, you know, there's like an appreciation. I mean, I'm sure nostalgia has a lot to do with
it. Well, I always thought they were awesome myself. But when I hear Robert Hilburn on the air the other night talking about how cool ABBA was, like, something has shifted.
I think
here.
The melodicism really kind of comes through and is really exciting. Like, when you go back and listen to those records, they're just balls out pop music.
It's,
you know,
great.
We're just going to put everything on it. We're going to have like keyboards, we're going to have tubular bells, we're going to have tambourines. And it's like exciting and kind of unapologetic.
Well, and great songwriting at the end of the
day. It really is, yeah.
So Charmer, I believe, was the first song that you wrote for the album, hence.
I had a couple. Yeah, I had like Sip and Roll was around. And,
okay.
I had some songs, but once I wrote Charmer, I really, like, that really got me on the.
Well, it set you off in a direction, right? So can you tell us a little bit about Charmer?
Charmer is that's like heavily influenced by the Cars, that kind of eighth note guitar and synthesizer approach, and even I'm even going to say like maybe a little Rockford Files theme song is it, like there's some quotes in there.
Wow.
So like the glory days of the early synthesizer, and it's about I was really fascinated by like the idea of charming people. There was a friend of mine who was very charming, and I just started.
What do you mean by charming?
Well, you know, I mean, it spans the it kind of covers the waterfront.
Like, well, that's why I'm
yeah, because
to...
Because this guy is like, he's very funny. He's, you know, he's very lively. He's very friendly. And, you know, he's very fun to be around. So I'd started kind of writing about him. But then as I was exploring it, I was sort of realizing that there was a darker side to Charm. So the song became like a little, you know, a little more dark and a little less about just how fun the Charm was. And I'd come across this quote that said, charming people are always hiding something, usually the fact that they're totally dependent on the approval of other people. So, you know, so that got me thinking. I'm like, honestly, like, I mean, we can all relate to that on some level, right?
Well, especially artists.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's all you do is you're dependent on the approval of other people. And, like, also because so many of my friends are comedians. And I'm like, God, talk about being dependent on the approval of,
right,
of others. I mean, like, on the moment, I mean, if they are not approving of you by laughing, you're just dying.
Yeah, slitting your throat.
At least as a
afterwards.
Musician, people have to clap politely, you know, right, like, even if they don't like it.
So Charming, obviously, as you said, there's usually some darkness underneath that,
yeah,
somewhere. And it also ties into something that I've read you mention a number of times about narcissism. And again, that comes back to artists, because obviously they're all narcissists on some level.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, everybody I think does have it to a certain extent. Like, that is, you know, that's a question that interests me, because I don't, you know, obviously I don't want to be narcissistic or as little as possible. So, you know, I do, and, you know, you see it in other people, you see it in yourself, and you know, like, a little goes a long way, I think, you know, and then more becomes, maybe a little sinister, you know, where the charm of people starts to become, you know, sort of manipulative, or, you know, somebody wants something from you.
And, sure. If I'm nice to you.
Yeah. If I flatter you.
Maybe I can get something.
What I also, like, you know, honestly, like, I'm super susceptible to that. Like, I, you know, when people, I think the part of charm is that people have a story about themselves that they tell you. And I believe it, you know, like, if you say it forcefully enough, I kind of believe your game. Mm. So, you know, that's like another reason I'm very interested in trying to deconstruct it.
So how did that then set the tone for the rest of the songs on the album? You've got a collection of songs, obviously. Were they all written around the same time, or were they kicking around a while? Because I know it was a couple of years in between albums.
I had a handful of songs, and then I sat down and played them through, and I wasn't really happy with them. So after I wrote Charmer, I kind of used that as more of a touchstone for the rest of the songs I wrote.
Hmm.
And I did just sit down and kind of in the next, you know, couple, 3 months, wrote the rest of them, probably about this time, like probably last summer. And then we started recording, I don't know, like last September, October, something around there.
Now, I know you, there's a duet on here with James Mercer,
yeah,
and it's ironic, really, for me, because I did an interview with him back in February when his Shins record was getting ready to drop.
Yeah.
And he talked about doing that with you, and I can't remember all the details,
yeah,
and we don't have time to share them, but he was very, very complimentary about the process of working with you, and I know that you've done the song live on the Nigel Godrich thing or whatever, but, I mean, can you tell us a little bit about that, working with other people?
Well, he was a real sweetheart. You know, it's interesting, like, you never, I mean, that was a song that was a real duet, and I needed somebody to really, you know, I mean, the whole first, it's a long first verse, and it's another voice, you know, another male voice. So it had to be somebody, you know, really great. And, you know, and somebody suggested James, and, you know, I mean, you always think, like, oh, come on, he'll never do it, you know, and then, so we're like, well, let's ask. I mean, maybe.
And then you find out he's a fan of yours,
yeah,
and of course he wants to do it.
It's really, I don't know, like, that really always blows my mind when that happens. And then he turns out to be super nice and really hardworking and, you know, like, you know, do you want me to do it again? And, you know what I mean? Like, there's no kind of rock star attitude or vibe or anything.
No, he's a good guy.
He's a sweetheart.
And then that song is called Living a Lie.
Living a Lie,
and,
yeah.
And it's intriguing because people who sing a duet, usually it's a love song, but these people are just like,
no, it's terrible.
They're killing each
well,
other
here's
in this
the,
song.
The provenance of that song is kind of strange. Like, Paul Bryan, the producer of the record, and he played bass. He's here now playing and singing with me. But Paul and I had been writing songs. You know, I had this idea of writing, making one of my records, The Forgotten Arm, into a musical. And so Paul and I had been writing new songs for that in so he'd been helping me write. And so for some, for this series of accidents, Paul and I found ourselves having drinks with Aaron Sorkin one night. And we were going to ask him sort of advice or just like...
And for the people who don't know, obviously, the producer and writer of things like West Wing and the Facebook movie, whatever that was called.
Social Network, which Paul and I saw three times and we were like, oh my God, Newsroom, this is the best written thing
now,
ever.
Yeah. So you're hanging out with him.
Yeah, so we were going to ask him sort of advice because he's like a big musical fan and we'd heard that he was writing a musical and that kind of thing. And he started out writing plays And then he started telling us about an idea that he had had for a musical that he wanted to write one day. And then I kind of realized he was asking me if I would be interested in writing music for it. And, you know, like obviously the answer is yes.
Was he being charming?
He's fairly charming, but he's also a little awkward. Like, he's not, he's not in the realm of charmer.
Yeah.
But
he was asking you if you'd be interested in doing the music for
this thing. Of course, but like having said that, he's got 50 million projects, like I'm not holding my breath or anything.
Sure.
But it was a very flattering moment. But he was, when he was describing the story, afterwards Paul and I were just thinking about like those characters and people we knew who were like that, and just as kind of an experiment, we decided to write a song based on two of those characters. And this was the song we wrote.
There you go.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing?
Thank you, Aaron Sorkin.
How something starts off in one direction and then just ends up becoming something completely different.
Anyway, so that's why it's so vitriolic. I'm not saying that I don't have vitriol in me naturally, but it was influenced slightly by somebody else.
Well, you're very lovely. I've met you a number of times over the years, obviously at the other place as well. And I always find you such a pleasure to speak with. The album is called Charmer. It's Amy Mann. It's on her own Super Ego Records. And it's out today, so it's an appropriate day for you to be here. And then tonight, one more time, in-store performance, I'm guessing,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And go say hi to Amy and then look at the fountains afterwards. 7 o'clock at Barnes & Noble at the Grove. And... wherever that is in West LA or wherever it is. I don't know where it is. It's just Disneyland for grown-ups.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We're going to go out with the last song, and this is Slip and Roll. It's Amy Mann. I'm Nick Harcourt. It's 88.5 KCSN.
You went from moonlighting, but you came out fighting. Saw you larger than life, throwing your knife, gone into deep hiding. But you were so charming that it was disarming. I wondered what was behind having to find an army that keeps arming. A slip and roll, honey, stick the jab, kid. Don't just treat punches like your father did. Cause playing the odds is fooling the gods. So slip and roll till you're willing to take the heat. So we just keep hoping, although the deck's sloping. Sammy, throw me a bone, or leave me alone to do what they call coping. A slip and roll, honey, stick the jab, kid. Don't just trade punches like your father did. Cause playing the odds isn't pulling the gun. So slip and roll till you're willing to take the heat. And you can take it, take it, take it, take it. We've all seen that guy take it on the chin. No, you can take it, but when will you take something in? the jacket. Don't just trade punches like your father did. Cause playing the odds is throwing the gods. So slip and roll till you're willing to take the hit. And you can take it, take it. Take it on the chin. Oh, take it, take it. I know you can take it. But when will you take something in? When will you take something in?